You're listening to The RN Mentor, a podcast designed to document and bring you the work and experience of some of the most influential nurses in our profession. We will be sitting down and having a discussion with the leaders of today's nursing world as they share their work, how they navigate their nursing path, and their views on the future of the profession. My name is Ali Tayeb. I am a registered nurse, United States Navy veteran, a Jonas Veterans Healthcare Scholar, and your host for The RN Mentor. Hello and welcome to another episode of the RN Mentor podcast. I'm very delighted to be joined today by Dr. Nava. Dr. Nava is an advocate for increasing access to care for underserved populations. As a registered nurse, she witnessed firsthand how access-related disparities led to poor health outcomes, especially for racial ethnic minority groups. In serving her patients, she saw an opportunity to contribute to decreasing Latino health disparities by building the leadership capabilities of nurses. She currently serves as the president of the National Association of Hispanic Nurses and is focused on building the leadership capability of nurses, specifically Latino nurses, who continue to be underrepresented in nursing and healthcare leadership positions across the country. Dr. Nava has an MPA from Harvard University, PhD in nursing and health policy from the University of Massachusetts, Boston, an MSN in health leadership policy from the University of Pennsylvania, and a BSN from St. Francis Medical Center College of Nursing. She is currently a performance measure research scientist at the National Committee for Quality Assurance in Washington, D.C., and a 2023-2024 visiting scholar at Emory Nell Hodgson Wartburg School of Nursing in Atlanta, Georgia. Previously, she was a nursing leadership role as the chief of quality at the Edward Hines Jr. VA Hospital in Hines, Illinois. For her leadership within the domain of veterans and Latino health, Dr. Nava has been awarded the Top 25 Emerging Leader of 2023 by Modern Healthcare, the 2022 American Nurse Association President's Award, the 2021 Humanitarian Award for the Hispanic Star, the 2021 President's Award from the Latina Style Magazine, the 2020 VA Secretary's Award for Excellence in Nursing from VA Boston Healthcare System, the 2020 U.S. Latino Leadership Fellowship for Harvard Kennedy School Center for Public Leadership, the 2017 Outstanding Alumni Excellence in Leadership Award from OSF St. Francis Medical Center College of Nursing, the 2017 NONS 40 Under 40 Recognition Award, and the 2016 to 2018 PhD Jonas Nurse Leader Scholar Award, the 2014 Community Education Service Award from AARP Illinois, and the 2009 Barbara Jordan Health Policy Scholar Award. Dr. Nava represents the NON at the White House for Nurse Appreciation Week roundtable discussion in May 22 and the signing of the executive order on strengthening access to the Affordable Care Act and Medicaid in April 2022. And if you don't follow her on social media, she is regularly in the White House. I feel like every post I see of you is something from the White House. So welcome to the show, Dr. Nava.
Thank you so much. So happy to be here and join everyone.
Thank you for making time for me. I've had the pleasure of meeting you several times through various conferences. And as a non-member, you are the president of the organization. So excited that you have brought, I want to say you've rejuvenated the organization since you've been president. Not that anything wrong with any other presidents, but I think you brought a new sense of leadership into the role, and I'm hoping that continues because I know you're timing out of your tenure there. So, but we'll get to the non stuff soon. So I'll start with the very beginning. And by the way, just for my listeners, Dr. Nava is only like 25 years old with all those accomplishments.
So I wish, but no.
So We'll start with, how did you get started in nursing? Like, what was your push to really become a nurse?
I was always interested in the sciences early on. So being in high school and interested in, you know, ways that I can explore career opportunities focused in science. And I actually had a number of nurses in my family. So that was pretty close to home in terms of thinking about becoming a nurse. I did have a little bit of a desire to become a pediatrician at some point, but I think, you know, the lack of representation of Latino physicians in my family and in my greater network, it made it seem maybe a little less achievable. But definitely got into the nursing trajectory as I started learning, you know, more about how nurses are able to provide care to patients and contribute to health outcomes early on. But it was still really exploratory in terms of like, where do I belong and, you know, how do I, you know, chart my path into some sort of profession going forward. So being a part of a bigger organization such as NON early on really helps solidify that, oh, I'm in the right place and there's ways for me to contribute.
Wow, that's amazing. What was your experience at your nursing program? Were there representation of other Latina nurses there, or were you one of the minority, as they say?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I actually am from the Chicagoland area. I grew up there and I ended up going to nursing school in central Illinois. So it wasn't very diverse. I was probably the only or maybe one of two Latinos in our program. So I was actually a part of a small group of students that initiated a minority student organization. So really just bringing together, you know, because there wasn't, you can't necessarily run an organization with one or two people, but like bringing together other students that felt like representation was needed and just a space to, you know, be able to build relationships and maybe share, you know, some common experiences with one another and build community was really important. So starting that organization with them was helpful in terms of building relationships and trying to navigate the nursing school experience, if I may.
Yeah, you kind of built your own community. Sort of say, and that's important. I think that, that's really important as you look at being someone, you know, being male in the profession of nursing. And for example, being an older student when I went back to school, because I served in the military for 10 years before I decided I was going to go back to school. So some building those communities, I think it's important because you can't necessarily always relate to everybody else's experience. So being able to relates to a group of individuals that can sort of speak like your own language, like as far as experiences go, I think it's important because that way it's just you build your own support system. So thank you. So you showed those leadership qualities early on by starting a starting an organization. What was your push? And a little bit of it came out in your bio, but what was your push to go beyond your bachelor's degree and say, you know what, I want to do more and I need these other degrees or these other paths that I need to. How did you, were there mentors involved? Was it something more self-learning? How did you decide those?
Yeah, I think early on it was kind of being at the right place at the right time and noticing where, you know, I was ending up in situations where individuals that I didn't know would give me advice and just kind of like planting the seed. And it wasn't someone that was a formal mentor or someone that I knew very well, but was like, oh, you should kind of look into this. And then I would. And it was like, wow, it exposed me to a brand new world. And one of the nice things was that actually my older sister was kind of already in the academic setting working at the University of Illinois Chicago. So she had knowledge and was privy to opportunities for students that she would share with me and my younger sister. So one of those opportunities was actually the Barbara Jordan Health Policy Scholars Program. So I was finishing up my nursing school program and was, you know, she forwarded me an email like, look at this program, you get to go to DC for the summer and, you know, do health policy, maybe you should look into it. So I did, I applied, and she was actually the first person that was like, hey, you should look into this, right? So then I looked into it, I applied, and luckily was selected to participate. So that was the first time I was exposed to health policy as a nursing student and being placed in Congressman Javier Becerra's office at that point in the summer, who's now the Secretary of HHS, but learning about health policy, which at the time wasn't necessarily embedded in the nursing school curriculum. Like you couldn't take a class specifically on health policy, and just being exposed to that early on as, you know, a new graduate nurse was like, wow, like this is really interesting. Being in Congress and seeing at the time the Affordable Care Act was the legislation that was to be passed, and, you know, just kind of being in the ground zero in terms of being there front and center and meeting with individuals who are interested in legislation to be added to the ACA was really like eye-opening, you know, because, you know, a lot of times as nurses, we focus on our contributions like to patients and families and at the inpatient setting, but there's a lot of opportunities for us to, you know, expand our power in terms of being able to influence decisions that are healthcare related outside of the clinical setting. So I would say that is the opportunity that really awakened me to like explore how as a nurse I could, you know, pursue a career in health policy.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So you got exposed to health policy rather early on. And I wish there was more of that going on, like purposeful curriculum development that included health policy, especially for our bachelor's students in their pre-licensure programs. I know the ADN program, I wish it was there too, but I know their program is so sort of short and so compact, it's kind of difficult to squeeze more into it. But at least from a bachelor's degree program, I wish there was more policy-related content there. So how would you, and this is something I think you've done as president of NON, that you've actually brought more attention to the work that organizations and nursing can do with policy work. And I think that's one of the beautiful things that's happened through social media. And you've definitely brought that forward. But from a perspective of nurses who go into nursing but don't really understand or haven't had that exposure like you did, what would you recommend might be a good way for the profession to start reaching out to them and making policy an important part of their work?
So I think right now, like what we've seen be successful is the partnerships that we have with academic settings and with NON specifically. So it doesn't necessarily have to be NON, because I know a lot of professional nursing organizations also have like their Hill days and have their policy agendas that they put forth for their membership and others. So, you know, that partnership is really crucial, especially for Latino nurses, because not only are they gaining exposure to, you know, representation in terms of leadership or, you know, other individuals doing a lot of, you know, cool things that you don't necessarily know that nurses can do, but then we're purposeful, at least, you know, at NON, to make sure that we're integrating exposure to health policy related content. So whether it's like, how do I meet with my legislator in my state? What are some of the websites that I need to know? What are some news outlets that are to follow that are, you know, bipartisan? Also integrating opportunities for them to, you know, learn a little bit of that like leadership development that is necessary for, you know, learning about policy and being able to speak up as an advocate. So the communication skills that go with that, the networking skills that, you know, we aren't necessarily used to, and sometimes we're not the best advocates for ourselves of like tooting our own horn. So like some of those soft skills are also really important in terms of advocacy and, you know, some of these more front facing roles to build influence in the policy arena.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So a lot of our nurses who end up, you know, they graduate and they go into various organizations. How do you think they can engage in policy work? Because a lot of organizations, you know, kind of have like a spokesperson, right? You know, so a lot of I think individuals who work within organizations are hesitant to do policy work because of public relations or other people that are kind of have like a little try to put a not a barrier, but they put parameters like this is what you can do, this is what you can't do, and that type of a thing. How do you think individuals, especially like nurses or minoritized nurses, can advocate for themselves within these organizations to become more involved with political work?
Yeah, I think it definitely starts like at the individual level. So making sure that you're registered to vote, your family is registered to vote. We have this great partnership with Vote ER where they encourage healthcare providers to get their patients registered to vote as well. And they send you these nice lanyards that you can order for free and, go in your workplace and use them. And even in the community, what we are encouraging our nurses through NAN. So I think that type of civic participation is something as an individual that we can all contribute to, as well as increasing our knowledge of what's going on around us in our local communities and where are there opportunities for us to, a lot of times it is through volunteer, but where can we, help the greater community that we live in, that we're experts in because that's our lived experience, but we can also contribute to change there locally. But in terms of, taking that next step, there's different levels, even within NAN, where you can be involved at the local chapter level and be able to, have an advocacy lens there. And sometimes advocacy looks like, educating others, right? Like, what are the issues that are of importance for the local community? Taking stances and position statements on behalf of the organization. And, for NAN specifically, we're run on volunteers. So a lot of this is fueled by passion and the desire to be a change agent. So, we definitely need the expertise of nurses and nurses in different areas for us to be able to identify what those policies or, those topics are that we need to address because of the disparities that exist or because there's something that, doesn't necessarily have we don't have the person with the knowledge or expertise that is kind of elevating that. So in terms of like being able to participate, you could do it, as an individual or, through an organization. So there's different ways to be involved.
Yeah, great points. Now, through your work that you have done over the years, and as I shared in your bio, been recognized multiple times for the work that you're doing. What was your influence to approach things from a policy perspective? Like, what was the and were there other individuals that you tapped into to help build that skill set? So how did that happen for you?
Yeah, unfortunately, I think a lot of it is like the lived experience of things like not having access. So even, working as a nurse, noticing that there's disparities or noticing that there's, discrimination happening amongst your peers, for example. So it's like you see these things and you want to be part of the solution to change them. But even from like a personal level, before the Affordable Care Act was passed, like at that point, I didn't have health care insurance because I was in nursing school and I was older than most students at the time. So I couldn't get coverage with my parents' insurance. So it's like sometimes like, wait, this doesn't make sense. Like I'm a student and I should be able to get affordable, health care coverage. So noticing like sometimes your own, needs that are not being met and like how do I advocate and noticing that, wow, this is actually impacting like hundreds, if not millions of people, like this is a problem that we need to address. So even with the passage of the ACA, still noticing that Latinos are the population with the greatest rates of not being insured as well. So it's like, well, how do we continue to move the needle and making sure that individuals gain access to care? So for me, a lot of it has been trying to build the skill set to be able to advocate for these issues and, potentially, conduct research at some future time or encourage others to be able to build those skill sets so that they can navigate a career where they can, build influence and what types of advocacy is available for them to do, whether it's through research or a leadership position in their community, or maybe it's an organization. And I'm really interested in leadership development specifically, especially for Latinos and nurses, because we don't see a lot of us in positions of leadership. And sometimes it's difficult to navigate, like, how do I get there when you don't have access to mentors to help you get there, or even have seen people successfully climb the ladder. So just trying to kind of build that resiliency within our members, but also expand their own, like, mindset of where they can reach, because you have to be able to see yourself getting there in order for you to kind of, be able to navigate that.
Very true. Very true. And again, one of the reasons I have this podcast, and I've said it on the podcast several times. I purposefully diversify my guests on the show because I do notice so many of the what I call the usual suspects that tend to be who the face of nursing is, and they tend to be white, right? So a lot of the students I've worked with over the years are not white, right? So I've worked at universities that have had primarily underrepresented individuals that are going through the program. And it's very true. They don't see themselves, unfortunately. They don't see it in the faculty necessarily, or they don't see them anywhere else. They don't. So very true that that representation is very important, and having that mentorship also in place. And I know LA Non is a very active chapter in the
yes,
whole.
Yes, they are.
Yes, and I think we have several of the past presidents that are engaged with the LA Non,
yes.
and with NSIMNA. And I think you're going to be at NSIMNA a couple of weeks, right?
Yeah, I'm looking. I think I won't be at the one coming up, but I was there last year, and it's a great event. So I encourage many people to attend the policy summit.
Yeah, so that one's coming up, and I'm going to put a plug in for LA Non. LA Non's conference is also, I think, the month after. I want to say, I think it's in April.
Yes, I believe April 12th, around there.
Yes, yeah. Yes. So I want to just switch. Well, actually, before I switch over, how did you decide you're going to? And by the way, I want to thank you for doing work with the veteran community. As a veteran, I'm always appreciative of individuals who work with the veteran community. So thank you for doing that. But how did you decide, I want to ask you, how did you decide you're going to go the research route and what kind of work are you doing now with research?
Sure. So I finished my PhD right before COVID happened. Mm. So it was an interesting time with everything kind of closing down. So I knew I wanted to get involved in the research side to, you know, be able to gain the skill set to be able to identify like why I'm using my voice towards what, using the latest evidence and research, and being able to integrate that. And also, you know, it was also, I think a part of me was I didn't think I would ever get a PhD. No one in my family has one, but just going through that journey, I think was really enlightening in terms of like, wow, like, I think you hear a lot of bad things about getting a PhD. It takes forever and, you know, you're going to be able to job afterwards. But, you know, in terms of like the self-growth and determination, ability to learn new skills and having kind of that autonomy to pursue a topic that you're really interested in and having the mentorship. I think during the PhD program was the first time I had someone really invested in my success that
nice.
It feels so empowering to have that experience. So I definitely recommend it for nurses who are considering doing a PhD to definitely explore that path. But I'm sorry, I think I lost my train of thought with what your original question was.
No. I was just asking what made you decide like this is the route that you're going to go and get a PhD. And the reason I wanted to ask you this because we don't have a large representation of Latinos in the PhD level. In nursing, I think I heard from a colleague of mine there's like a few hundred, not a huge representation.
Yeah, and I think it's something that, you know, it's challenging because I know for at least from my experiences, nurses tend to get PhDs a little bit later in their career. Yeah. So once you've already been in the workforce, earning an income, and then deciding to do a PhD maybe in an expensive city, it doesn't feel like economically it's something that's achievable. So sometimes you have to, you know, put your family first or your financial needs first before deciding to pursue like an advanced degree such as a PhD. But I know for myself, like I had to work full time while doing the PhD. So being able to, you know, decide for myself, like, is this something I actually want to do? And being able to find options was really important. I did go to a state school at UMass Boston. It was a great experience. And being able to build a network of researchers and nurses who are interested in, you know, addressing health disparities is fantastic because you can't necessarily do this work alone. And being able to pull on that network so far has been really great. So I encourage individuals who are considering it to definitely look at faculty who are already doing research and how what you're trying to do aligns with some of the work they're doing and how you could bring a different angle to it and address some of the unmet needs of the population that you're looking to serve.
That's great advice. That's great advice. So again, I think it's fantastic that you got your PhD. I think we need more representation in the doctoral programs, period. So I want to switch gears a little bit just because I want to be cognizant of our time. And I want to have the opportunity to talk about NAN. So you are the current president of NAN. You have, 4 or 5 months left? Something like that?
Yeah, I'll turn over to Dr. Vital from Phoenix, Arizona in August after our annual conference that's in Atlanta. So I hope people can make it.
That's awesome. Yeah, actually, we were looking at that. What made you pick Atlanta in August? Because the weather is not exactly ideal for Atlanta in August. But that may be your planning committee we need to talk to.
We'll take that feedback into account, but it'll still be a great time. If you haven't been to a non-conference, it's a great time.
I'm sure it'll be great, just as long as you don't leave the hotel.
Exactly.
So as long as you stay in air-conditioned areas. So I wanted to have the opportunity for you to talk about NAN, the organization, and perhaps some of the work that you've done as president, and where do you think the organization is going?
Yeah, I think, since I came into NAN back in, 2010, so it's been quite a while, I love how each president has brought a different flavor to NAN and, their expertise and been able to keep us, going for over, this is going to be our 49th conference. So we've been around for about 49 years. So I think that, shows the dedication and the leadership, that we've had over the years. I think for myself, I was really interested in elevating nursing workforce issues, but also Latino health issues. Right. And, some of that has come from making sure that we're able as an organization to be able to become, nursing experts on how to address the disparities that our Latino community is facing. And I know one of the things that I needed to focus on with the board was how do we build programming to build leaders, essentially. So whether they want to be leaders, in the organizations where they're working, whether they want to be leaders in the community and maybe run for office one day, or, how do we even get nurses appointed to, national positions of leadership? And what does that look like? And a lot of it started with, well, first we need to educate people and expand their, thinking of how as a nurse can I contribute to health policy? So one of the ways we've done that is by starting our first Hispanic Health Policy Summit. So that started in 2023, where we brought together leaders to come discuss Latino health issues in general, but we were also trying to bring together the greater Latino healthcare professional community so we could start discussing what would a shared Latino health agenda look like, and bringing together Latino dietitians, physician assistants, nurses, physicians. So, trying to build more of that influence and power from the Latino provider space. So we would be seen as the experts in our community and called upon when there's, questions about how do we improve healthcare for Latinos in general, but, improving healthcare for Latinos really improves healthcare for everyone because we want to really see it, all individuals thrive in their communities and have access to resources. So so we're really focused on leadership development at the organization. And as we go forward, sustaining that is making sure that, we have diverse voices that are joining us at NAN. We're continuing to provide those opportunities for leadership development and building the networks with, government officials, as well as other organizations that are interested in addressing health equity.
Yeah, that's all great. Now, I have a question from a workforce perspective, and correct me if I'm wrong, but last time I looked, there's still an underrepresentation of the Latino community within the nursing profession. I know the numbers for male nurses is definitely below average, for way below any, I think, every other ethnicity. Does NAN have a plan, or is it up to the individual chapters to really look at workforce and promoting that, promoting the profession, so more there's more engagement from the community?
Yeah, it's a great question. So a lot of our chapters have been doing a lot of the work of going into like high schools and being like the face of, you know, nursing within their local community. At Non-National, a couple years ago, Dr. Vivian Suarez from New York, she created a mentorship program where we nationally were able to carry that out for a few years. There is talks about like, what does that look like again for like leadership development mentorship? So that I'm hopeful that that's something that we bring to the agenda going forward. But in terms of our leadership at NUN, one of the things that we've done to be intentional with making sure we have diversity is within our 10 committees that we have at the national level, we've made sure that each chair has a co-chair that is a member from that committee that gets trained on how to like run the committee and more of that like strategy and leadership development that you don't necessarily learn, you know, if you're not in a position of leadership already in your organization, with the intent that like they're learning to become the future leaders of NUN, and building that, you know, skill set for them and the visibility and the courage to like kind of step into that role early on. So even if they don't run in the next cycle or in the next couple cycles, it's kind of planting the seed of, I've already been on national work at the committee level. The next step is probably running for a board of director seat, you know, and then after that, like, well, board of director, you've learned kind of the logistics of running the organization, running for an executive office position, if not president, is something that, you know, we're trying to build that like pipeline for leadership within NUN. And making sure that we are intentional with creating opportunities for diverse leaders.
That's awesome. That's awesome. What do you think organizations that are not like not academia? Well, academia, I think, has its own challenges in recruitment, just because I think there's so many barriers, like, you know, that are in place that keep a lot of the students out of nursing programs. I think especially first gen nursing students and students of color, and so academia has its own issues. But what do you think, being in an institution now, for right now, being in an institution that is an FQHC primarily serving Hispanic population, underserved Hispanic populations, and us doing some workforce development stuff, what are some examples, or what do you think what can some organizations do in order to increase the workforce? Because I know NUN is going to be is a great place for us to do recruitment, but I think academia and other organizations like hospitals and ambulatory care centers can do their need to have their own contributions, right? Have you seen any great examples or other organizations that are actually contributing to the diversity of the workforce?
So one of the things that we started recently was having corporate memberships or educational memberships, where an organization, like an academic setting or even like a healthcare system, can purchase memberships for their nurses to participate and be members of NUN. And that's one way to build community. And a lot of the benefits that we have is that, you know, we do put on conferences that are educational. We do award CEUs for different educational content. It's also building, you know, networks focused on more community building, but also making sure that nurses have like leadership development, which also helps nurses in their place of employment. So I think that's a great benefit. One of the nice things that we've done at the Emory School of Nursing is we created a health policy immersion program. So we have individuals who are interested in addressing Latino health issues apply, and then they work with me through NUN to learn a little bit more about the greater healthcare system, their role as nurses in participating in healthcare policy decision-making and kind of building that influence. But then they were also at the policy summit that we had this this past February, and they were given coaching by me for leadership development and communication skills, and were able to integrate, you know, healthcare data, where disparities lie with their passion and be able to build a narrative around why this topic is important and how, you know, their lens of viewing the world through their experiences helps magnify why this is an issue. So it was actually really nice, but it's like, you know, kind of that hands-on like training that individuals need is a great way to get them engaged and passionate about a topic, but also build community. So now they're a part of a larger network that is going to look out for them as they try to navigate their professional career.
That's excellent. You're making my brain work. I think I need to call you up after this and say the wheels are turning. All right. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Like I said, having moved into, I've worked with an organization or with a FQHC. It's Ultimate. I'm going to put their name out there. If you haven't heard of Ultimate, please look them up. They're doing incredible work. Serving a much needed community. And they do a lot of workforce development, and they're doing a lot of with the intent of serving, and it's in their mission of serving Hispanic, Latino, underserved communities, whether insured, uninsured, whatever the case may be. It started mm-hmm. out as part of the 1960s. As part of the civil rights activities that happened in LA, as part of the Brown Berets, and now it's the largest FQHC in the nation. So they're doing incredible work, a very diverse population. I want to say something, I may be misquoting this, but I don't think I am, but 75% of their workforce is Hispanic. So they you know, including their physicians, providers, things like that, which is really, I don't think, if you looked at any other organization, it's going to look like that, especially an organization that this large. So they have a lot of pathway programs. I oversee the nursing pathway programs, and I have counterparts on the physician sides that see that look at the physician pathway programs. So I just wanted to put that out there, just because I think there are a lot of opportunities for nurses to engage. And I think there are a lot of opportunities for partnerships. And like I said, I need to pick your brain a little bit more off of the podcast, because I think that there might be opportunities for us to partner in some activities. So I think it's fantastic. And I appreciate what you're doing.
And I just wanted to add one more thing. Please. That, you know, our membership is also composed of affiliate members, nursing affiliate members. So we also welcome certified nursing assistants and other unlicensed providers to join us at NON. Excellent. With the intent that we could plant the seeds that maybe a career in nursing is something that they may look into, if not now, in the future. But also helping them build their network and making sure that we can create a pipeline for individuals to go into nursing.
I appreciate that. Like I said, I'm lucky enough. I'm only 5 weeks into it, but I've worked with Ultimate for several years now as a consultant, and lucky enough to be part of the organization now in a more permanent role. But excited to be working with them. And yes, we definitely need to touch base. Before I let you go, any last thoughts that you'd like to share with the audience, or put in a pitch for the membership into NON?
Yeah, I think you don't necessarily have to be Latino to join us at NON. We welcome everyone, since addressing health equity is the role of everyone, and we have a role to play in that. So we definitely welcome you to join us either at our annual conference that's coming up at the end of July in Atlanta. It will be hot, but I promise it'll be fun. Or we have our upcoming 2025 Hispanic Health Policy Summit, and would welcome all nurses to join us as well, as we, you know, strive on our mission to become a national leader in addressing Latino health issues. So thank you so much for having me here today.
Great. Thank you so much. And I'll put in a link for NON on the website. So if you're interested, and you can't find, you should be able to find it if you just Google them. But in case you can't, and you're listening to the podcast, I'll put in the link there for you. And Dr. Nava is all over social media, so she's easy to find as well. So definitely encourage you to follow her work, and she's got great White House pictures. All right. Well, thank you for joining us. I appreciate all of our listeners. Big thanks to Dr. Nava, and I look forward to bringing you more guests very soon. Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the RN Mentor with your host, Ali Tayeb. Please don't forget to visit www.alirtayeb.com. That's www.alirtayeb.com for podcast notes and resources. And don't forget to subscribe. Until next time, I wish you fair winds and following seas.